not man, what is man, where would each marmon,
yep,
where would each men, but this is about magazine on RTR.
Mag on RTR FM 92.1, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM Albany on Minang Country. Good that you've tuned in to a program that's going to really shake you up. So if you're tuned in, or if you're going to tune in, maybe you even need some tissues, but that's probably being a little dramatic. Jim here with my casual temporary co-host, and maybe longer. Tony, how you going, Tony?
Yeah, going good. Conk, how are you today?
Okay, Conky is what?
Conky is brother, uncle.
Uncle. Tonji, otherwise. Alan Carter's another guest today. How you going, Alan?
G'day, Jim. Great to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And Alan's been on the program before a number of times. In fact, he's a friend of Murich Mag here on 92.1. Stay locked in, because today we're talking genocide. What does genocide mean? Well, today we're talking genocide in the Wildflower State. What does that all mean? Wildflower State is WA, of course, and that's where you are here on Whadjuk Country. And we're going to be talking some of the serious issues that have confronted our community since the day dot. Oh, hang on. Until BC. BC. Before Cook. No, but yeah, until Cook arrived, and then all these dramatic things happened. So we're talking a range of issues. Stay tuned, because I think you're going to find this really interesting, and I hope that it will generate enough interest for you to be yarning with your family and maybe even come to the documentary launch on the 28th of April. So keep those dates free. And for the next few weeks of Murich Mag, we're going to be telling you all about the documentary, telling you the content of this 54-minute documentary based on... Oh, not Blackwater speak, white speak, because it's taken out of political arena where politicians talk about us and tell us how we should be bred out, all those sorts of things. That's what genocide's all about. So we're going to be delving into genocide and eugenics today. So a real difficult subject for our people, that is First Nation people. And I hope you'll find it interesting enough to stay tuned for the full hour of Murich Mag. We'll have a couple of guests coming in talking to us about their involvement in this production. So today, you're being hosted by Alan Carter, Tony Hanson, and me, Jim Morrison, who are executive producers of Genocide in the Wildflower State. Let's go to a song, because, as I say, stay tuned. Lock yourself into a seat, because this is pretty powerful stuff. Stay tuned to Murich Mag.
Troy Cassadaly, The Freedom Ride. What a beautiful song, Jim.
TCD, Troy Cassadaly, yeah. Freedom Ride's all about Charlie Perkins, the late Charlie Perkins, legend in his own right, and when he did the bus ride around Moree, the racist places around New South Wales. Took a group of students with him and went to a number of places, including the Moree swimming pool, the Dubbo swimming pool. Yeah, certainly one of our legends, passed on now. A great advocator, along with John Moriarty, I'm just remembered. His name too, John Moriarty, and Charlie Perkins played professional soccer in the UK. John Moriarty, you might remember us talking about him previously. He was responsible for the artwork on the Jumbo, and those two amazing gentlemen are no longer with us. So Freedom Ride is a great, I guess, memory for us to realise the racism that our world has gone through, and how we had to picket these places to try and get our kids into the swimming pool. I had the same experience at Katanning. We had the same experience at Katanning, where Aboriginal people weren't allowed into the swimming pool. I remember going to the Katanning swimming pool with two cooling bottles, because the refund allowed me to get in. And I was allowed to go to the swimming pool because my dad was a citizen, you see. Citizen down the road.
Yep.
Today we're also going to be talking about Harmony Day and what that means. So let's not get both subjects confuse, or maybe you'd like to draw a line in between the two, racial discrimination, genocide, and whatever eugenics means. So today, let's have a yarn about that. And, Alan, genocide, what does it mean? You've got kind of a definition here that comes up in our documentary.
I have, and this is actually reading in part from the documentary. In 1949, the Commonwealth of Australia ratified the United Nations Convention on the Crime of Genocide. This convention defined genocide as, quote, acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial or religious group. The UN was clear that acts of genocide included forcibly taking children away from their families and their people. I think that's pretty clear.
Yes, and we talk about bring out the colour. We're fortunate enough to be in the office of AO Neville. I don't know what AO stands for. I don't even want to know. AO. I can think of what the acronyms should be, but what's his name?
Auber Octavius.
Now, he instilled the breed out the colour policy between 1930 and 1960, and we're fortunate enough to be sitting in his office and have done for the last 8 years. Fortunate, maybe. Unfortunate, maybe. I don't know. It's a bit scary stuff, isn't it, when you think about eugenics and genocide, and we sit in his office where we expect our people who are stolen to come in and feel good in the place.
Yeah, a place of trauma, a place that's had a huge impact on all Aboriginal people in the state of Western Australia. You know, a man that sat in this position for several decades and had a powerful impact right across the state, and also influenced other chief protectors in other states and territories across the country.
Definitely. Rumoured that he also influenced the apartheid laws in South Africa. That's a rumour. I don't have the proof of that. So we're talking genocide and eugenics today. We're talking about a documentary we're releasing later on in April. We're hoping our listeners will come along. Or maybe, talking to the manager today, he says we might have a special screening. A special screening of Genocide in the Wildflower State. At a destination yet to be found. So, and look, keep tuned, because for the next few weeks leading up to 28th of April, we're going to be giving you a bit of snippets of what the documentary involves. We're, as executive directors here, or executive producers, I don't know what we are, I get the names all mixed up. What are we?
Producers, executive producers.
Whatever that means. What does that mean? Anyway, we've been involved in this production. It's kind of scary, really. The more closer it gets, the more worried I am about the trauma triggers that might be entailed in this documentary. So it's not going to be The Sound of Music or Babe or any of those sort of soft little things you might have seen on TV over the years, or Gone with the Wind might get closer, but most of our listeners wouldn't have a clue about Gone in the Wind. So it's going to be a tough one. What do you reckon, Tom? It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, I reckon it will be. For me, it's the time is now. The time is right. It's things, documentaries and stories like this that we've captured, Jim, you know, with working with our Stolen Generation people in our communities. You know, they've come on the journey with us. They had the faith and the trust in us. And I think this time, the time now is, it couldn't be any better. It's a great opportunity it's a great opportunity for all Western Australians to know the truth. To know the truth, because the government isn't telling them the truth. And this is this great platform. And I think, for me, I think all Australians have the right to know the truth as well as Western Australians. And this is a great segue into this journey of genocide in the Wildflower State.
Look, again, Genocide in the Wildflower State. We're going to bring in a couple of guests on shortly, Steve Mickler and Frank Rikovic, who are heavily involved in the production. But let me just give you a little explanation here too. Genocide in the Wildflower State. In springtime, along the side of the road leading to the infamous Moore River Native Settlement, bloom some of the finest wildflowers in WA. Their delicate beauty contrasts with the sinister purpose once served by this now faded and crumbling state government institution. It was a concentration camp for a systematic program of human biological absorption, for breeding out the coloured of any mixed-race people for the purpose of achieving a white Australia. WA practised eugenics well before Hitler. Let's go to a song so you can absorb what I just said. Today we're going to sort of flesh it out a little. Flesh it out? Flesh it out. Thrash it out. flesh it out, I think, either, and talk some more about how we put this product together. Quite frankly, it's part of the campaign to enable West Australian Stolen Generation people to have some closure and get some compensation. We're going to go to a song. Stay tuned, Woodish Mag. Keep it locked.
We show up no more on the voices before.
Okay, this is a community announcement for all our First Nation listeners and those that know First Nation peoples. Mr. Mervyn Street has brought a case in the federal court against the West Australian government on behalf of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who worked but were paid little or no wages between 1936 and 1972. You are part of this class action if you are one of these people or represent a parent or spouse who qualifies and has since passed away. The West Australian government has agreed to a settlement of the case in which it will pay up to $180,400,000, depending on how many people register. The court will need to approve the settlement before any money is paid out. If you want to register your claim for compensation, you need to complete and send a registration form by 30th of June 2024. Find out more or get a copy of the form by calling Shine Lawyers on 1800 976 150. That is 1800 976 150 or visiting shine.com.au/stolen wages WA. That is shine.com.au/stolen wages WA. This is a community service announcement.
What a great song, Jim. Emma Donovan, Take No More. Mm. And I think we're doing that today. We're taking no more. We're ready for the fight. We're ready to keep the fire burning.
That's a great song, and it will be featured in our Genocide in the Wildflower State production launching at, I won't tell you the destination until we do all the finalisations and invites, etc., at the Lunar Theatre over there in Leederville. Hey, our guest today, Stephen Mickler. Hello, Steve.
Morning, Jim, Charlie.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. I'm well, Charlie. How are you?
Steve Mickler. Frank, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you going, Jim? How you going, Tony?
Frank, sorry to drag you out of beds, guys, but, you know, this is an important subject. You're involved in it. And starting with you, Frank, welcome. The program is going to be talked about today and over the next few weeks leading up to the 28th. And the documentary we're talking about is Genocide in the Wildflower State, directed by award-winning filmmaker Frank Rickovic, which is you. Previous documentaries, Exile in the Kingdom, what else was there? Habits of New Norcia. Frank, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. Yep, it's good to be on.
Yep, this is RTR FM, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. So you'll tell all your friends that you'll be on the radio tomorrow or later on today. And if you want to pick up the podcast, it'll be available later on today. And those listeners who want to text in, 0405921921, 0405921921. So, Frank and Steve, welcome to Mudich Mag. You know, it's a radio station that have done really well for us, one of the few radio stations that have a Welcome to Country every morning and one of the few radio stations that have a Reconciliation Action Plan. So thank you for being on the show and talking some more about this documentary that I don't know what I'm getting nervous about or excited about. So welcome, Frank and Steve. Frank, over to you. You've been involved in the production from the word go, and you've been involved in lots of documentaries. Why is this one different, Frank?
Look, it's I guess, you know, I've been working on films that have dealt with Aboriginal history for over 2-3 decades. But when I attended the forum and I filmed a forum that you guys held in Albany last year. And at that forum, it was a chance to meet personally with survivors of the stolen generations and just see the energy and the dialogue in the room and the emotion in the room that we're ultimately a resolution was proposed that went to government that said, please, West Australian Parliament, do the right thing and recognise what we went through properly and go through proper redress. So it sort of started there for me, but more than that, it was a series of interviews that we did with survivors after that, which were really moving. I mean, I crack up every time I think about what people gave us in their testimony, how honest they were, how brave they were, and that really was the beginning of this feeling. It's those interviews, just the courage of those people, and they're all in the film, and those interviews are in the film.
Great.
And I just wanted to do them justice. That's what it's all about.
Thanks, Frank. And yes, it's something you can't avoid getting emotional about. And we were there with you, Frank, and it was around the time that we launched the Bessie Flowers book. Now, if our listeners on RTR-FM haven't seen that yet, look at Bessie Flowers on YouTube. It's a wonderful documentary about four young Minang girls from Albany, being taken from Albany on a boat to Melbourne, never to return. And the documentary is about their descendants coming home to Albany. So we launched their book and took the opportunity, Tonj, didn't we, to film the event, and also, as Franken said, interview a lot of our people that were stolen from Noongrup and Marybank Mission.
Yeah, and it was really special time, and you know, just to know that the Flowers family came back home to country where they belonged. You know, they were lost. And they were lost because of the policies and legislations of government of the day. People like A.O. Neville and the former chief protector before then, Prince.
Yes. Yes, and Steve Mickler joins us. Frank, we'll come back to you, get you a chance to catch your breath. I know it's been a tough one. It's a tough one for all of us, and I think we're going to be really tested, I think, leading up to the launch, and we're going to be tested even more after the launch. We're getting quite a bit of traction now. We're going to launch it in Albany on the 10th. Of May. Frank, if you haven't heard that already, we booked the Albany Town Hall to have a launch in Albany. Steve, I mean, you've been involved in this area for a long time. You're the author of A Boy's Short Life. So welcome, Steve, to the program, and tell us why this is different and what your involvement has been, please, Steve.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, my involvement has been working with Frank as a co-writer and assisting with the script editing and research for the film. And I must say, you know, it's an honor to work with Frank, a filmmaker I've admired ever since the days of Exile in the Kingdom, you know, a superb film about the Njibaji people up in the Pilbara and their struggles. So what's special about the film, I felt, was not only the extraordinary stories told by stolen generation survivors in the film, but the way they have spoken to Frank openly, and the way Frank has managed to represent on film those interviews, and they're extremely powerful, and they affect you. And the other aspect is that the focus upon genocide, the genocidal character of the policies of a mass removal of Indigenous children last century. Now, that's nothing new, in a sense, right back to the National Inquiry into Separation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Kids from Their Families, and its Bringing Home report found that those policies were genocidal. But this film actually focuses on it and centers the grave injustice and argues genocide occurred, argues along with many researchers and many inquiries and top lawyers that this constituted a genocide. And I think that's one of the unique features of the film.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for that. WA Stolen Generations Aboriginal Corporation, along with Stolen Generation survivors and their family members, together with archival images and historical documents, have come together to provide a deeply moving and disturbing expose of the often denied and dismissed reality of past race supremacists, state thinking and the misery families see today. So back to you, Frank. It's taken a while to get to this point, and look, we are proud of the contribution you and Steve have made. It's been a tough one, and so we really appreciate you being involved. So the challenges for you then, both you, Frank and Steve, I mean, there's challenges now with getting permission to use certain pieces of music, et cetera, et cetera. We'll resolve that. But what were the challenges for you both? You first, Frank.
I guess it was the challenge. It's really the difficult work and the long work, which Steve has just been absolutely priceless in working with, is going back into the state records and going back to the documents, because the testimonies of survivors at the moment, you know, come from the heart and come from the memory. But when you see it in black and white in the state records, it just makes it so much stronger and irrefutable. It's the people's testimonies alongside those records give you such a vivid image of what happened for, and we're talking here, for over many generations, right? This began, yes, before the World War II, but it didn't finish until the end of the 60s. So our survivors went through the last phase of that, which carried through a lot of those sort of the genocidal characteristics of breaking up families. So bringing that together with the interviews was complicated, and you can't fit everything in. It's just finding those bits and pieces. And what was invaluable, actually, and this goes back to the work the ALF did in the late 90s, when the National Inquiry into the Stolen Generations was led by Mick Dodson and Ronald Wilson, is that in those submissions from the ALF, which incidentally, one of the major submissions called After the Removal was written by our current minister, Tony Booty, had excerpts from the native welfare files that just made it so much more vivid and really disturbing, and gave me such a palpable sense that even though we've heard about the stolen generations for decades now, that a lot of the story has been buried, that the information that would really cut through and move, I think, West Australians and Australians in general hasn't come to light. I'm hoping that the film does a little bit in that direction and brings that to the fore. Incidentally, in that submission by Minister Booty that he wrote in 97 and was submitted to the National Inquiry, he also describes the process of trying to breed out Aboriginal people, yep, as amounting to genocide.
Yes.
He used that word.
Yep.
And this is recent history now. We're not talking, you know, back in the way distant future. We're talking about experiences that our living survivors of those stolen generations can tell us about as well.
If you just tuned in, this is Moorish Mag. We're talking genocide in the Wildflower State. Frank Rikovic is our director on the line, and Steve Micklew is our script editor, historical consultant. Look, guys, I hope you're going to stick around. We're going to play a song now and come back to you and talk some more about this wonderful production that you've been working with us on, because the host of the show today, Alan Carter, Tony Hansen and myself, were the executive producers. Let's go to a song. We're going to talk some more. Hang in there, guys.
Fixed Address, We Have Survived.
Oh, butter, We Have Survived the White Man's World. No Fixed Address travelled the country with a mob called Us Mob, and discovered when they get to certain places they couldn't take the booking because they're the wrong colour. Ah, and that's what happened in the racist world that we live in today. No Fixed Address, We Have Survived the White Man's World, and that's what genocide in the Wildflower State's all about. So welcome back, Frank, and welcome back, Steve. Hey, you guys. Frank, Steve, you still there?
Yep, still here.
You like that song, We Have Survived the White Man's World?
So true.
Look, we can keep you on the program as long as you wish, but it might be that after the next song, we'll say goodbye to you, because it might be that we discuss some more with you. But I'm getting a bit nervous and probably a little stressed like Frank is. How are you feeling about this, Steve, and how it's coming on?
I'm very confident that of the integrity of the film, and the power of the voices that people will hear in it, the voices of the victims and the survivors. And, of course, in any kind of research project, because I approach this as a research project, a little bit different than what I'm working on, which are sort of books and articles as an academic, and I've written, you know, about the Stolen Generations in the past. So this was a bit of a different challenge for me to work with Frank and yourself, I should also say, the best producers you could hope to have.
Yeah. good on you, Steve. Look, we're going to, inform people. Kelton Pell's going to be involved. He did the narrative of this production, and it was a heavy going for him. Now, Kelton Pell's been on Redfern now, Mystery Road, The Heights, and a whole host of other films that have been captured on NITV, and you may have seen them yourself. Kelton Pell, Frank, you really was committed to getting Kelton Pell on board to do the narrative. How are you feeling about it now? I mean, it of course, was a challenge. You spent a whole day talking with him and getting to do the recording of dare I say, some very challenging material. So how are you feeling about that now, and how are you feeling about what we've achieved with Kelton?
Oh, look, I think it's amazing. I've always admired Kelton's work. He's a legend, really. I think he's one of the greatest actors Australia's produced. And he hasn't... He could have... If he had had better breaks, he could have been international, and probably is, but I don't know. But anyway, it was just a pleasure. And that goes to the team, you know, that... This has been teamwork. I mean, the survivors are right at the heart of this team that made this film. But Yochai and the network that you guys have set up in terms of a support network for survivors and, you know, the kinds of outreach and education work you do, that's all there in that work in making something like this possible. And... giving it the authenticity and the trust that people need. It came from Yochai. You know, people wouldn't have opened up like this, you know, to me anywhere else except within that network. And Michelle Braun also helped in that, with those interviews. And where people have that relationship with of trust, where they understand that they can open up. They don't have to be defensive, as they might be in other situations. So I think it's important to say that these things don't come out of, you know, one or two bright ideas. They come out of a history of that sort of collaboration that in this case came via Yochai. And I must say, you know, I just hand it to you guys for the work that you're doing and that have made, you know, given me an opportunity to work with you.
Thanks, Frank. I must acknowledge Tony Hanson, who's my co-host today, is one of the youngest survivors in the country. I've been taking from his family. Got to acknowledge the other survivors in the documentary, and Brenda Woods comes to mind, Valerie Woods, Gary Ryder, Gail Yorkshire, Mari Pryor and her daughter Lorraine Pryor, who talks from a intergenerational perspective. There's been some wonderful people that have given testimony. Tony, how are you feeling about what the product looks like now and your involvement?
Yeah, no, Jim, I'm feeling really comfortable. I just want to acknowledge Dallas Phillips and Timothy Flowers as well. But I think for me it's a great opportunity to expose, you know, the system that we live under and the betrayal that's happened to, you know, First Nations people right across this country, but more significantly in this state, and that impact, which is profound.
Yep.
You know, 100 more institutions than any other state or territory.
Yep.
Who would be thinking something like that, and why? What was their purpose? And I guess having, you know, the trust like Frank is talking about, you know, survivors have got the trust with the Yochai team, and I'm really keen to... you know, start their journey and talk about their experiences, good, bad, or otherwise. And we know that trauma impacts individuals in different ways.
So true. So, Steve and Frank, we might let you go shortly. We're going to play a song. But, Steve, so how are you feeling about the testimonies of these wonderful people that are given the, an opportunity for us to tell the story? So how are you feeling, Steve?
I'm feeling changed, in a sense, particularly from listening to those stories, those personal stories, the horror, but also the hope that as the Stolen Generations people in the film say, they're asking members of Parliament in Western Australia, they say, please work with us to put the trouble in the heart of our state to rest.
Mm.
So there's solutions there, and regard, you know, in the face of all of the trauma and intergenerational trauma, they're putting forward a message of how to move forward, and how to heal this, if the government will come on board and work with people. And I think that's a very, very powerful message, which affected me.
Oh, great, Steve. Thank you for that feedback. I might let you guys go, Frank Rukavik and Steve Mickler. It's been wonderful working with you. Thank you so much for coming on Murich Mag today and Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. And we'll come back and some more and talk to Alan about his feelings, but also, more importantly, what today is all about. It's Harmony Day today, but there's some frightening issues around Harmony Day and what it actually means. So, Frank and Steve, thank you for your time today. It's been wonderful talking with you. RTRFM are obviously one of the supporters of this program. They didn't know this yet, but they know now. So we'll get them involved, and they're going to be seeing a trailer or some of the production sometime soon. Steve Mickler, Frank Rukavik, thank you so much for joining us on RTRFM Murich Mag.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Tony, Alan. Yeah.
Jesus. Let's go to a song and we'll come back and talk more about what is Harmony Day, Tony, Alan?
Ooh. Bumpy falling. Bit of Tracy Chapman there.
You reckon that's Tracy Chapman? Oh, look, we were speaking earlier to Steve Mickler and Frank Rukavik, producer and script editor, historical consultant to genocide in the Wildflower State, and our producers here are Alan Carter, John? Who is John? Tony Hanson and myself, Jim Morrison. Alan, what did you think of the production so far and the testimonies of those people that gave their story?
Well, I suppose picking up on some of the comments that were made by Frank and others, for me, one of the big things is the extraordinary testimonies of the survivors. And as we've indicated, it was due to trust. They trust you guys. And through that, they trusted the people that we were working with them. But I suppose for me, the big take home in all of this is, in a sense, we've been not quite pussyfooting around, but we've not been pushing this issue hard. And now the time has come to call a spade a bloody shovel and say to people, this was genocide, and the population of Australia need to understand that.
Yeah, the time has come to say fair's fair and pay the rent. We launched it 2 years ago in Broome, and we were up there, Tony, weren't we, when we launched the campaign as part of the Stomping Ground. And was it Stomping Ground?
Yeah, Stomping Ground in Broome. And,
yeah.
You know, all of our ministers from WA went up there to be part of Stomping Ground as well.
So the genocide in the Wildflower State is part of the campaign to ensure that Stolen Generation peoples in this state get some closure and compensation like every other stolen person in the country except Queensland. But then WA is similar to Queensland, and it's probably the most racist states in the country. We won't go there, but it's I think it's truth-telling is what we're on about. And what today coincides with, apart from the 150th podcast of Murich Mag here on RTRFM 92.1 and Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM, it 150th podcast will be available later on today, but also Harmony Day. I haven't been a big follower of Harmony Day, and perhaps because I now know the reason why Harmony Day was initiated. Tell us, Alan, what is Harmony Day all about?
Harmony Day was initiated by the Howard government back in 1999 when John Howard, former Prime Minister, was leader of this country. And sadly, there are parallels with the work that we do in terms of the Stolen Generations, because while he was Prime Minister, the Bring Them Home report was tabled. And people may recall that John Howard was basically saying, I'm not apologising for what happened. I'm not talking compensation. And he appeared at a major reconciliation event, and a large number of the audience stood and turned their backs on him. In a similar way, what he's doing here is trying to flip something which should be focusing on racial discrimination and turning it into a celebration of multiculturalism. And that's his approach. It should be, and it is, the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. We need to acknowledge that. He denies that there's racial discrimination in this country. And many of the Liberal Party people and others in the community still naively believe that to be the case. So it's become this celebration of multiculturalism, and that's a wonderful thing because, as Jim and Tony will tell you, there are many in the multicultural community who support the work we do. But we should not deny the fact that racial discrimination still exists in this country, and we should be trying to eliminate it.
There you go. You're probably hearing it for the first time. 0405 921 921 if you've had any thoughts about Harmony Day. I mean, even BC before Cook, there were 250 different languages, so we had a lot of harmony. 750 different dialects across the 250 different languages BC before Cook. So, you know, do we get a chance to celebrate our diversity and culturalism? And what do you reckon? You know, it is about why can't they, we should be saying, why can't they be like us?
But black and deadly.
So, yeah, okay, so you've learned about Harmony Day and you heard earlier about the genocide in the Wildflower State. You'll be hearing more over the next coming weeks, right up until the public launch on the 28th of April. There'll be a couple of opportunities to see a screening at the State Library early April. There is a screening down in Albany on the 10th of May, so our listeners on Minang Country can come along to that. More news about that as the weeks go on. So, Tony, Alan, we'll talk about it some more for the next few weeks. Get some of our guests that were courageous and appeared on screen, something they hadn't done before. So the likes of Gail Yorkshire, the mother of Trevor Jamieson, hopefully he can come along to the screenings as well, because he's famous in his own right, Trevor Jamieson. He's famous because he's for his beard, I suppose. He's got a white beard and he's really, really black. You know the man, eh? So Gail Yorkshire, Gary Ryder, we mentioned the names before, Tim Flowers, Ezard Flowers, relatives of Bessie Flowers, and we talked about Bessie before. Some of the others included Dorothy Bagshaw.
Yes.
Yourself.
Dallas Phillips.
Yours truly.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, I'd be interested to hear from Tony. The listeners may not be aware that for a lot of Stolen Generation people, they've never told their story.
Yeah.
They've never told their families.
No.
And I think that's something I'll leave it to you to expand on it, but I think that's something that's really important. People need to understand that this trauma still lives with them every day, and they don't want to go running around telling their story. So it's been an extraordinary honour to have them do it for us.
Just look at Banksia Hill and the issues around the Dodd boy who died as a 16-year-old in an adult prison. Look, this is getting a bit stressful. Let's go to a song, because we're going to talk some more, and let's talk also about this amazing duo, Electric Fields. They're going to be representing Australia in Eurovision.
Wow.
I think we might have some music here of theirs, but let's find it. Let's have a break, and if you're tuned in, 0405 921 921. We've talked enough about genocide and eugenics. Perhaps we need to talk some more about eugenics, but we might carry that over till next week. Want you to tune in for the next few weeks, because this is a really important stuff. This is truth-telling. RTRFM are famous for truth-telling, and this is why I want you to hang in there and try and capture the feeling of First Nation people about removal, and see more, because it might be that we have several screenings, and I expect all the RTRFM listeners to come along on the 28th of April. If not, we'll just won't have any more Muddy Schmag, eh? Let's go to a song.
I'll put a
Electric Fields there, Australia's nomination to the Eurovision. Yeah, a couple of artists there, gender non-conforming artists. Both describe themselves as he, she, he, me, he, him. I think that's the correct way of doing it. Yeah, Electric Fields, we're going to be playing some more of those, and we'll play next week as to why they're being nominated for Eurovision. So you're tuned into Moodish Mag if you have just done so, and hope you've still got your tissues. No, you don't need tissues now, because we're going to calm down a little and sort of lift the energy a little to what we really need to be talking about. And so we've talked about Harmony Day. It's been a real, I guess, expose, really understanding what Harmony Day is all about, and it is about racism, eliminating racism. I think what we've heard today is that, you know, the Breed Out the Colour policy and issues around genocide and eugenics was a lead-up to, and what we're seeing in our research, a lead-up to the apartheid laws in South Africa and the way it was carried out through people like A.O. Neville, who initiated the Breed Out the Colour policy, which took our children away. My mother was one example. I was at Ngawangrup Mission and taken from her family. My father was also one. And again, acknowledging the work of Tony Hanson, who, my co-host here today, and being the youngest survivor in the country, his history of being at Marybank Mission, the forerunner, or which what became after Carolup.
Yeah, no, it is, Jim. And I think also that listeners need to know that, you know, Henry Princep was also the first Chief Protector of Aborigines.
Yes.
And he had a huge influence and impact on our people as well, just like A.O. Neville did.
Right. So, if you've just tuned in to Moodish Mag, come back to us again next week. We broadcast through Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM in Minang Country, and we're touching on a real... difficult subject for us to talk through. I hope you can take it on board as truth-telling and something we want to make sure our RTRFM listeners understand, because that's what Moodish Mag is all about. And so thanks for being part of the show today. It's been a tough one for us, a tough one. Thanks, Frank Rikovic, for being on board from Albany, and Steve Mickler, ex-professor of media from Curtin University. So it's we've got some talent on our show. And remembering it's not Aboriginal speak, this is white speak. What you've heard about today is taken from libraries, politicians and, research. So thanks for being on board again.
Thanks, Jim.
Alan. Thanks.
Thank you.